Market moving insight and analysis. Join Jim Cramer, David Faber, and me, Carl Quintanilla, on the opening bell hour of CNBC Squawk on the Street. Good Wednesday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer, David Faber, coming to you live from separate locations this morning. Futures positive, but they did take a hit as ADP reports 20.2 million jobs lost in April. That's the worst in the history of the data set ahead of the jobs number on Friday. Oil was trying for a sixth-day higher on signs of a rebound in gasoline demand, but that has reversed. Jim, it's sobering to see an ADP number like the one we got today.
Yeah, this is a reminder of the two economies and their impact on the stock market. The stock market's a financial market, and periodically you'll get something like an ADP payroll, and you'll say, wait a second, what am I doing buying a consumer spend stock? And then you'll get FANG and its acolytes, the companies that are involved with home office, involved with 5G. And you'll say, you know, so what? I mean, that's now. Tell me what's going to happen 18 months from now. And the 18 months focus is that we have the vaccine, we have people back to work, and the demand will be strong. So there's a huge valley. I don't want to call it a V or a W because it's more like the Grand Canyon. But there are a lot of people who are looking through it, and then there are a lot of people who are stumbling. And if you look at oil, it's a good indicator of whether people are looking through it or not. Every time oil's up, there are a lot of people who say, you know what, I can stick with the consumer, it's fine. And then when oil's down, say, well, hold on, I got to default to Alphabet.
Yeah, that disconnect is interesting. Oil got above 25 today. So what wins right now? Oil's 30% gain and the optimism about reopening, or the relative cautious stance of some of these macro data sets we're getting?
Well, I think that what wins, it's actually a kind of a barbell. What wins are companies that are good cyclical, what's so-called early cycle cyclicals, where people feel that maybe things can come back if the Treasury keeps pumping and Fed keeps pumping. And also just these companies that are remarkable, that are levered to China. I mean, China is so strong. I know that it must just drive, hate them or like it, must be driving the president crazy. But anything China is just on fire, including, I believe, Shanghai Disney will be on fire. And then against that are companies like Royal Caribbean Norwegian. Royal's got to do what Norwegian did. Norwegian or Carnival, where people are saying, I don't know, I'll bottom fish with the bonds. I'll get 12% or I'll get 6 in a convertible. So there is just an incredible number of bets being played by many different hedge funds, which, by the way, as Brian Sullivan reported this morning, is the longest the hedge funds have been in 3 years. I don't know if that's good. David, they're all in.
Yeah, that's a surprise to me. I mean, many of the ones that I speak to, at least, are not all in and are scratching their heads to a certain extent in the same way that we seem to sometimes in terms of the performance of the overall equity market, particularly the Nasdaq, although given some of the things that you point out, it's easier to understand why some stocks are doing particularly well, Jim. But I'm not finding that. In fact, the conversations I have with most of the hedge fund guys I talk to are more on the lines of, I'm not sure what to be doing right now.
Right.
You know, I don't want to trail the overall averages, but I don't want to chase here. I don't believe we're having anything like a V-shaped recovery in the economy, even though we seem to be having a V-shaped recovery in the stock market.
But, you know, consider these cruise lines, okay, because I think that they're the most extreme situation. A lot of people feel that they were bad actors. I don't know. They were actors. They're cruise lines. I mean, they go on cruises. I look at what happened last night with Norwegian. They got the deal done. Now, the reason why this is such a great microcosm, they got the deal done in the hole, okay? It was not terrific terms, but they got it done. Now, who buys that stuff? Well, the answer is people who believe that in the end, Norwegian's going to ship again, $750 million, $6 exchangeable, $13.75 convert. Then they did a 12.25 senior, $675 million. I mentioned this, and I don't know whether the Royals going to have to do it to follow along, but I mentioned because, David, that's about hope. It's about the Federal Reserve backstopping. And then you start hearing crazy people say, you know what, they're going to buy ETFs if they have to, Japanese-wise. Hey, Carl, I think that one of the reasons why the financial guys are so active is they just say, you know what, the Fed put is the strongest I've ever seen it.
That's the story. That's what everybody comes back to, Jim, when they want to try and explain why this market is behaving so well. And certainly your point on the bond market is well taken, even though they haven't yet actually bought any of these things, right? It's just the possibility of the Fed stepping in that has really bolstered that market. We've talked often about it. Of course, last week, let's not forget Boeing raising $25 billion
in that
market.
That was watershed,
one of the largest offerings, one of the largest of all time. And your point is well taken, of course. Companies that are extremely risky right now are able to at least get the lifeline they need to take them to some future date. We don't know what things are going to look like come the fall. We don't know what they're really going to look like come next year, but it gives them time to hopefully put things together and hope that there is a significant rebound.
The vaccine. How many times? Carl, every single talk I have with the CEO ends with, but the vaccine, the vaccine. They better come up with a vaccine. Look, obviously, we want it to save human lives, but there is a sense that there's the Fed until you get to the vaccine.
Exactly right, guys. Nightly News last night did a look at the NYU trial, the first 12 healthy Americans who are getting inoculated with vaccine candidates. And there's obviously a lot of hope. At the same time, Jim, more reports today that what we thought were going to be temporary furloughs are becoming permanent layoffs. Uber's on the tape right now, 14% workforce reduction. Reports yesterday out of about Airbnb. We know what Boeing's doing. Right. We know what UAL is thinking in October. I mean, that's sort of leading to the kinds of ADP numbers we're looking at.
Yeah, the Airbnb was very interesting. Brian Chesky runs the company. And this is one of those. I used your Airbnb extensively. I went away from hotels. Why? Because it was such a bargain. And now, I guess, you know, people just don't think you can wipe down a house the way Marriott can wipe down a room. And these layoffs were very painful because the revenues were down 50%, you know, in half from last year. And this company's got the money. I think it's got the wherewithal. But can it get through this valley where people are not afraid? And we're going to talk about fear all day, I think, because of Disney. How fearful are Americans? I almost think that there's two countries. They're the countries who laugh, part of the countries who laugh at the fear, and there's other groups who are paralyzed. And I just keep thinking, well, if the people are laughing, why aren't they flying? If they're laughing, why aren't they going to the few things that are open? So I think they're laughing, but they're not going.
Yeah. I mean, that. You know, Jim, I've made this point recently, so goes Disney, so goes the economy to some extent, because it will be an interesting reflection in terms of behavior when we see those theme parks open. And CEO Bob Chapek talking about that on the Disney call last night, of course, their expectations that demand will be there at least to the capacity that they are able to handle, which would be half, right, at the most.
That'd be hopeful.
50%. Right. When they're opening Shanghai, they're going to open it even lower than that. But he was talking more about and answered a question about the domestic parks and what he's seeing there. But that continues to be the question. You know, many people seem to be, and again, in this area, we're still under more of a lockdown, so to speak. But certainly many parts of the country, Texas, for example, many tell me business as usual in many ways. But there is going to be a cohort, Jim, of the population that simply is unwilling to, as a result of the risk factor, go out. It's not an insignificant one. We know the numbers in terms of people who are over 65 years of age, for example, or have underlying conditions. You take away that kind of a demand from an economy, and it's still going to have a significant impact, one would expect.
Well, the self-quarantine is self-evident. And I think you're right about Disney. Rich Greenfield was on earlier, something I disagree with entirely. He said people will have to wear masks. He said people have their temperature taken. Go look at the Tennessee Pledge. I think people should, you can Google it. Tennessee Pledge is the one that a lot of people are relying on. It has really very good breakdowns of what you have to do if you run a service business. You have to ask 3 questions about coughing and temperature and whether you know anyone who has COVID. Then you have to be willing to submit to a temperature. Then you go in and there's only maybe half the tables, maybe a quarter of the tables, and the people, they use gloves and they use masks. And I've got to tell you, if you're going to go out, get used to it. So if everyone's doing that and Disney offers it, you switch from thinking what a pain in the butt to thank heavens. And the Tennessee Pledge is Tennessee. I mean, that the Governor Bill Lee, I love that name. He's like, yeah, great pitcher. But I do believe that that's the way you have to look at things. The pledge tells you exactly how you have to do it. And it's not good for the people who are offering the services like that are covered by PPP. But I think Disney's got a way. And I think that betting against Disney right now is obviously not right if you look at the stock. But you're right, Dave. This is the barometer. There's the Disney index, and it's made up of Disney.
Yeah. Listen, the questions about the parks, of course. I mean, they lost $1 billion in really, what was it, kind of 2.5 weeks in terms of the park. But the run rate of loss there is, many analysts are estimating, is about $1 billion a month now for the parks.
Ooh.
That is a big number. They obviously contribute a great deal to the company's free cash flow.
David, what would happen if they hadn't done Disney Plus? What would it look like?
I mean, by the way, if they had waited, right?
Yeah.
They're very lucky. They're very unlucky, of course, overall, because so many of their businesses are so tied into so many of the bad things that are happening right now. But they did launch in November, and to have 54 million people, it is stunning. It really is. To start a service just that short a time ago and have 54 million subscribers, and the price, I think, it comes back to at $6.99. It's always been a key distinguishing sort of feature of this from the minute they revealed it over a year ago to us, Jim. But that's stunning, and that is going to be such an important component of this company for years and years to come. But don't forget, they're spending on it. It still requires a lot of spending right now, and they don't have the cash coming in. Another reason why you might suspend the dividend for
but
a half a year.
They raised
example,
money pretty good.
$1.6 billion.
They went to the market twice.
They did.
They did good. Carl, how often are your kids a consumer of Disney Plus?
Look, it's an amazing resource now. I mean, the subs sub growth really doesn't seem that surprising, and we're still waiting for Japan to roll out. But to Rich Greenfield's point, if you were looking for something that would limit scripted content and live sports, this is it. And that hits at two big pieces of Disney's flywheel.
Well, Michael Jordan is saving both Nike and Disney. It's really rather extraordinary. Michael Jordan numbers are just incredible. I know that I am tired of watching replays of fantastic teams that won in the playoffs. And ESPN's why. I look at ESPN every day, ESPN Plus. I don't know why. I mean, I don't know. I get pushed jet moves that the Jets are thinking of making.
Just wait till the South Korean baseball season starts. I'm all in, man.
What's the fan base there?
I don't care. I'm gonna watch.
Just let's hope nobody tests positive, because if they do, they shut it down for 3 weeks, guys.
Oh, my.
We are getting more on Uber's job cuts, 3,700 of them. For more, let's get to Deirdre Bosa this morning. Hey, Dee.
Hey, Carl, that's right. 3,700 jobs are being cut at Uber, and that makes up about 14% of its total workforce. They're happening in support and recruiting. Also, from this SEC filing, Dara is foregoing his salary for the remainder of the year. Of course, guys, this is just the latest company to be hit in the sharing economy. We heard about layoffs. 25% of Airbnb's workforce was cut yesterday. This comes on top of Lyft, Lime. I'm sure there's more to come, but remember, Uber reports Thursday after the bell. Lyft is today. Certainly the pain looks to be far over for these ride-sharing companies. And remember that gross bookings, their ride-sharing revenue, has really fallen off a cliff amid the COVID crisis.
Wow. There's something you didn't see. I mean, as part of the economy, like Airbnb, just deeply embedded instantly. Millennials love it. And I think millennials, by the way, are going to surprise people by not wanting to go out. They're not cleanliness is next to godliness, but the millennials are much more discerning about things than this middle generation of baby boomers who just, you know, kind of like accept it. I really think that there's a big change going on. We're going to hear that from my Beyond Meat on tonight. I mean, Beyond Meat, why are people buying Beyond Meat? Well, one of the reasons is because of the Tyson food factories. They're appalled. They're clean. David, you disagree with that?
Yeah, food's becoming a fascinating story, Jim. Whether it's Beyond Meat trying to, we'll talk about it after the break, but cutting prices, trying to take share. And then you see Papa John's, Wingstop, 30% comp growth in April so far. So people are, they're eating at home, and increasingly, Jim, they're going to fast food places for food.
Yeah, and they're playing Call of Duty. I don't know, maybe what is that? That's kind of like Mensa? Is that you have to be Mensa to join? Is that Summa?
We'll get to Activision 2 and EA and CVS and GM. There's a lot to get to, guys, on this Wednesday. Take a short break and we'll have more on the other side. Don't go anywhere. Beyond Meat up 10% pre-market as the company had earnings last night. They look to grab some share now that meat supply in this country is being threatened. Jim asked the McDonald's CEO about that very phenomenon during an interview last week. Take a listen.
I certainly expect that over time that you will see plant-based on the McDonald's menu. I think for us, the question is really about when. And our system operates best at scale. We don't do hobbies really well. And so when we bring plant-based on the menu, we need to be confident that there's a sufficient level of demand that really will allow it to stick on the menu. And so that's going to be a country-by-country decision. I think there are going to be some countries that are further along on that than others. But I do expect that, we will have plant-based on the menu. It's just a question of when.
I think the pandemic is speeding up a lot of things. We're going plant-based. I think that the Tyson performance was so abysmal, that recognition that the meatpacking places somehow, no matter how much they follow the CDC and the rules, they can't seem to stay clean. I think Beyond Meat, I know when I was at Costco, Beyond Meat is just a huge seller. They've been hurt by food service, but there's a groundswell. It's not Zoom with $300 million, but I think that there are people who are getting appalled by what's happened at the meatpackers. And the more we read about it, the more we think, you know what? Beyond Meat is the way to be able to get protein, but skip that thing called the industrial cow.
You've got Ethan Brown on tonight, Jim.
Yep.
And I guess that means you are not heartened by Tyson resuming production in Waterloo this week?
Well, I'm glad that they closed it. But look, I just think, look, there's something obviously wrong when you have factories that you're doing everything you can to keep this disease out. Let's hope that this new Waterloo works. But I think these stories make you become not necessarily a vegetarian, but to think twice about beef. And then you think twice about beef, and then you try Beyond. You kind of realize it's very, very similar. They're both protein sources. The new Beyond sausages are much better in terms of the kind of ingredients that we used to get. The price differential could be big. At last, Ethan Brown may have that price differential where he's cheaper coming under the beef complex. And this is, it's a really important ethos, not a hobby. And I love Chris. I think he runs a great chain. I think the franchisees, they just don't want it. Who wants another line, basically a line where you have to do something that's anti your core business? But Ethan Brown is a missionary. For 10 years, he proselytized, and I think it's hitting home. I think it's a real trend. I had Impossible on last week. Now, they are GMO, which is something that obviously is a curse word among some. But, wow, this movement's happening, and you got to get on the bus or get left. Get left behind.
But, Jim, I think it's important to put it in some perspective. I mean, you're still talking about a company in Beyond Meat that did, what, $97 million in revenues? I mean, these are still very small numbers, growing off that base, obviously, at a very high rate, but nothing compared to some of the bigger companies.
You know, look, it starts like that. I mean, Nestle's picked it up because they think it's, when I had Nestle CEO on, he said, look, this is a must in Europe. So, I mean, it starts like this. I don't think it doesn't begin with $1 billion. But well, this is not a blockbuster drug. But watch this trend. I think it's very exciting for investors.
Yeah. We'll cover that along with Wendy's, which is now saying on the call that the fresh beef supply issue that's been reported on is temporary. More on that when Squawk on the Street continues in a moment. ADP coming in with a 20.2 million job loss for the month of April, worst in the history of the data set, setting us up for what might be a very difficult number when we get the jobs number on Friday. In the meantime, though, futures hanging on to some gains. Back in a moment.
Welcome back to Squawk on the Street. It is a relatively small toy company, but it's large enough to be the feature of today's Mad Dash. Talking Mattel, Jim.
Yeah, Mattel's on tonight on Mad Money. And what's disturbing is point blank, they're saying that the fall off was more extreme than expected. Yunnan is considered to be a visionary, but they missed by 20 cents. Olympics and movie delays hurt them badly. But people always think about toys doing well in a recession. It didn't happen here. And then, David, the stark number I wanted to give you is Barbie is down 10%. So it's kind of a metaphor, isn't it?
It's interesting, yeah. Board games? I would think board games would be doing pretty well.
Always,
right now.
Always, and they're
maybe
not.
That's just not.
Well, look, Hasbro's done okay. It's just that this is a group where it, historically it's been good. I'm wondering whether this also isn't the digital economy, where people are not just playing, obviously, video games, but people are downloading apps and they're playing with them. And the app store is doing incredibly well. We had a great piece by, you know, my fave, Katie Huberty from Morgan Stanley, talking about the remarkable app store numbers. So I think people are getting digitized everywhere.
Yeah. Well, Hasbro, as you point out, is three or four times the size at this point, market cap-wise, of Mattel.
Right.
Which has been suffering for years, as it's had a series of different leaders, of course, trying to sort of stem the decline there. That Barbie number is not a good one, though.
No. But we're getting all sorts of industries that just seem to be decked. And then we get a lot of other situations where just, I mean, look at the second-tier internet place, Pinterest, last night. Terrible. People did not like the number from Twitter. You're seeing companies, it's just the big three. It's Facebook, Alphabet, and the one that you taught me to watch, which is certainly the one that I'm most excited about. Amazon ads. They're remarkable. They're really doing well. So that's kind of where we're going. Everything's changing again rather rapidly. All you got to do is read the first line of that Microsoft conference call. You're getting 2 years shotgunned into a couple of months. And I just think that it's we're in the Zoom generation, David. We're no longer in the selfie generation. You know what that is, the Zoom generation?
Right.
What is it?
Yep.
What's the Zoom generation? It's a kind of a quiz. It's where you look hideous on Zoom and you need makeup and Botox. And that's why I like the Allergan AbbVie deal. Botox will never be more important now that 300 million people are looking at you and yourself. When you look at yourself, David, it cries out Botox.
Oh, it's just, you kidding me? Of course, it absolutely does. I don't know when I'm going to actually be able to try and use that stuff. Although Brent Saunders may have a little time in his hands now that the deal's going to close soon.
Yeah.
Maybe he can help out.
Because he's gone from the new team.
You know, he's very good at, telling me where I'm going to, I don't know, where would you put it? I don't know.
On your forehead and then around your eyes?
What happened to your selfie? What happened to looking your selfie best, though?
I got that from Fabrizio Freire, the CEO of Estee Lauder. He's moved on from selfie best to Zooming best. Well, there you go. More green.
Carl. Yeah.
Yeah, indeed, Jim. There is the opening bell. I'm just looking for the players this morning as my computer's frozen. But, Jim, just in terms of the price action, we had that interesting upside reversal on Monday. It seemed like yesterday Clarita took some wind out of the sails. By the way, it's Kevin McSpeeden, a assistant chief electrician at the NYSE, at the NASDAQ, Lyra Therapeutics, focused on ear, nose, and throat diseases. But why the churn here, Jim, between 2,800, 2,900?
I think that a lot of people really took heart from oil. The just incredible decline in oil really freaked people out. And now that that's off the table and coming back, people are realizing maybe it was an aberration. Mike Wirth, the incredibly good CEO from Chevron, told you it was just a financial, totally divorced from oil, financial trade. I asked him, why don't you just stand there at a dollar and buy all the oil you want? But it's because it's very small. So I think the hedge funds have always taken their cue and said, oil's good. Maybe the economy's good. And then no one has really seen anything bad yet from the reopening of the economy. I know it's just been a little bit, but I think that people are kind of heartened. I don't want to get too caught up in it because you know that it's the disease does not work the way we expect it to. And the disease is like Goldfinger.
No.
You know, it's really insidious.
Yeah, I expect you to die.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, people are watching spikes out of Nebraska, doubling in a few days. But it's so early, Jim, that it's,
yeah.
I mean, we really do have to wait until, middle of the month at least before we can put a grade on the quality of these reopenings.
Yeah, I mean, this disease is not, it doesn't give you the instant gratification that hedge funds want. Hedge funds are buying stocks like Illinois Tool Works and PPG, betting that it turns out, you know what, this is going to be shallow. And it's going to be shallow, why? Because America's open. I don't know, you listen to Fauci in the National Geographic article and you say, geez, look, either he has puts on the market. Well, he does not follow the market. I'm being facetious. But he makes me more concerned, although I am heartened by what's happening at Disney. because I do think it's not down 10 bucks. I know it's early. I like what's happening in Starbucks. I like what's happening in some of the winning companies in America, where they just have good balance sheets and they have taken advantage of these real estate investment trusts that are so hobbled, where we're looking at real estate investment trusts where they're thrilled that 54% of the tenants are paying. What is that?
Right. By the way, that was April. May is going to be considerably worse, one would expect, in terms of what we see from retail, at least. And again, working off the Vornado numbers or some of the others. We did get Taubman numbers, too. They did pull down on a revolver. Of course, people continue to watch that closely. We got the proxy there, Jim, in terms of Simon Properties. But, you know, continued concern in some way. Don't know a thing. Everybody I talk to expects at this point it's still moving forward. But that's a tough deal, of course, for Simon to swallow. But Taubman did report numbers. That's why I pointed out when you point out the REITs. Jim, you also mentioned Pinterest. That's worth mentioning again and coming back to you on, because it is down over 17% after reporting earnings.
Well, geez, I mean, they just talked about, when you see this, the language, we began to experience a sharp deceleration in the middle of March as advertisers responded to the change in demand. Once again, you find these advertisers who are, for instance, in travel. I mean, travel is much more of a, we're all learning how big travel is as part of the U.S. economy. We don't make anything, but we travel. I mean, that's kind of the little facetious things that people are saying. And when you take away all the travel advertising, you really crush a lot of different companies. I think it's important that you look at the, again, the big three advertisers, big three TV shows now, big three viewing, big three everything, Google, Azure, Microsoft, of course, and Amazon. Well, they don't have a lot of travel ads, so they're holding up really well. They have a lot of consumer product goods ads. That's what to watch.
Yeah. Look, well, we know stocks. What Barry Diller said on our air a couple weeks ago about ad spending in Expedia. And then New York Times today, Jim, even though digital subs up almost 600,000, they do see ad revenue down 50 to 55 in Q2 and really couldn't give anybody any visibility beyond that.
That was stunning. And now, obviously, the failing New York Times is not failing if they've got that many new subs. That's an allusion to someone. 587,000, highest number in history. But people do look at ads and just say, you know what, subs are just harder to get. I don't think so. I mean, I can't wait to hear what Mark Thompson says. This guy's kind of a hero to me because everyone said that the Times was a dead tree production and that great journalism wouldn't sell. Now, I know that there are a lot of people, hate him or like him, Trump would tell you this is the worst journalism in the world. But I think there are a lot of people who want to be informed. And this is another way to be informed other than a particular news channel. And they're kind of polar opposites.
On the subject of advertising, guys, Carl, if I can, worth mentioning Discovery, because that conference call, I'm not sure if it's concluded, but they reported numbers this morning, of course. And when it comes to ads, as you might expect, they said they've predictably seen higher cancellations and deferrals in the second quarter. Based on the business book for the remainder of the quarter, both May and June, they said we're looking slightly better than April. But again, as we hear so often, it's a fluid marketplace. And at the moment, with a lot of cancellations rolling month to month, they are not in a position at this point to give specific guidance in terms of what they expect for the remainder of the year. That stock is benefiting, though, up a little bit, more than 1% right now. Is Discovery. But again, when it comes to the ad market and the traditional media companies such as Discovery, we haven't heard from a Viacom or a Fox yet. Disney, of course, part of that as well. Very unpredictable at this point in terms of what they expect to see for the remainder of the year. Then you move to the sub, to people cutting the cord. And the question remains whether that is something that's going to increase over the course of the summer as more people sort of look to broadband as the main product and realize that they can do without so much of what is the video cable product, so to speak, particularly if sports doesn't come back anytime soon.
Are people betting that sports is, David, because Disney's only down 60 cents? Or is this just the greatest short gone wrong? I mean, everything's going wrong, right, except for Disney Plus. So the shorts just lean all over it in I don't know. I think they may have to cover. I mean, the stock should be down. I mean, come on. I mean, this is it's kind of a. It's not exactly.
I guess. I mean, can you look? I know. Can you? If you're willing to look past, how long is it, a year or a year and a half? I mean, if you want to look from 21 to 22 numbers, I guess, Jim, then it's going to be very significant growth at Disney. But people were at 440 this year for earnings, and now they're at 220. I mean, they've cut in half.
It doesn't matter. It's an iconic name. It's down 40 points. It has a good balance sheet. It has great management. And they're going to see their way through it. That's what I hear. And I think that that's all true. There are some iconic brands that are going to get to the other side simply because they are iconic. And I don't know many companies that is, and I know that's an overused word, but there are not that many that are. And I think that.
Right.
I mean, look, I don't hear anyone who says the football season is going to be canceled. And football is really important for them. I don't hear anyone. I hear that it could be Thanksgiving and all you're going to do is play your own division rival. But that will still have something to talk about. And look at the numbers from that draft. Carl, you see it was like 55 million people watched the draft. I didn't even find it exciting and I watched it because it was like live. There were people doing things live.
Yeah, over three days. Unbelievable. Yeah, exactly. Jim, GM is above the 50-day for the second time since February as they extend some revolvers. Magically, this $1.4 billion hit is almost the same number that Disney gave us on the coronavirus impact. But autos are interesting today. I see VW China sales down 2 in April. You would have expected a much larger number than that.
Yeah, pickup sales, GM, heavy duty, fantastic. I think China is, look, this is, I'm not a fan of the PRC. I've made that over and over and over again. The Communist Party, I can't stand. But I got to tell you, that economy is really coming back. And GM sales are going to be very, very good. The economy is just great there. I don't think there's anyone to say that. I see a lot of articles that say they're not spending. That's not what the numbers say.
Yeah, that's what I'd heard, Jim, that the consumer has not been particularly strong as yet in China. Are you hearing differently?
I'm hearing they have a lot. They pumped a lot of money into the economy, and that they I don't think they want. It's not in their interest to talk about how good it is, because that's, again, feeds into the narrative that that there was a nefarious plot, the Goldfinger plot. I'm not buying the Goldfinger plot, but I do, meaning that there was someone who really did this. But as Fauci said, who cares whether it was manufactured or whether it was from a wet market? Who cares? It's obviously wrong to do. And it created this. And I think that a narrative which says that their happy times are here again in China just accelerates the anger that the world may have toward China, including all the Belt and Road companies, the countries that took the money, had the Chinese workers come a la Italy and then. Well, Italy.
Jim, you mentioned briefly AbbVie when we were talking about Botox and, of course, the purchase of Allergan. That is expected to close now any day. Perhaps Friday seems to be in focus as the most likely day that it will finally close that deal. It was delayed longer than they had anticipated. Of course, the FTC finally approving the consent decree for the sale of drugs that amount to about $150 million worth of sales, a lot of enzymes. 3-2 vote, by the way, the Democrats voting against. Some see that vote as a precursor if in fact, the FTC were to move to Democratic control, that you're not going to get a lot of deals done. So that's sort of scaring people in the M&A market a bit. But they did finally get to the finish line. The Irish court this morning approved the deal as well. Expected to close is Friday. Our old friend Brent Saunders will not be on the board of directors, having made a decision. It appears that too many conflicts there when you're trying to potentially go out and find another job as he would. But I know you've been very focused on AbbVie as a stock, Jim. And now we are there in terms of the actual close of this transaction.
Gonzalez delivered a fantastic quarter. There are a bunch of drugs that are good. The Imbruvica is good. But what's really exciting to me as the chief spokesperson for the Migraine Foundation, they have a pill that you take, and an hour and a half, the migraine goes away. And this is one of the reasons why AbbVie bought Allergan. And then part of the reopen of America, dermatologists, doctors, they know how to wear masks. They know how to wear PPE, and they know how to deliver Botox. And I think that his Gonzalez's talk about Botox is just fantastic on the AbbVie quarter. That is just something that people they have a hard time living without. Remember, it's cash pay. You don't have to worry about the government. So I think this deal is closing just when Allergan looks the best, which is it's on the come. And there's so many people who have wrinkles that has been pent up. David. They'll be lining. I have to do distance, social distance lines to go get Botox. What's the matter? They do.
Nothing. All right. Well, are you going to be on one of those lines?
Well,
I don't know.
I mean,
haven't started yet.
Because
once you start, I guess.
Right here. Now, you're supposed to get it here.
Oh,
I had
God.
It here. You see, because when you have a migraine,
headaches,
it really helps.
Right.
But I like this.
Yeah.
I like the Aimovig from Amgen and the new drug from Allergan, which is going to be a blockbuster because it's going to be distributed worldwide by AbbVie. Remember, Allergan was very weak, I thought, international. Brazil is a great market for Botox. They love it. But it's worldwide. They didn't have the sales force. AbbVie's got the sales force. I love this combination. It's terrific.
Right. Another combination you love was Bristol-Myers Celgene. Little note here for everybody as well. Jim, you may have seen it. They exercised a 3-month amendment for the CVR. Remember that that CVR, the contingent value right, based on the performance of drugs that need to get FDA approval. They pushed it out there. The PDUFA date, the date by which the FDA has to rule, is still within the overall now, given the 3-month extension. They're talking November having to rule by. But that is having some pressure on that CVR that's been out there since, of course, the Bristol-Myers Celgene deal closed and has looked very good because it did appear that the drugs in question were all going to actually be approved.
Right.
We'll see. We don't know yet, but BMYR could be under some pressure.
It's interesting that Bristol Myers sells as cheap as it does, but I thought the Celgene deal was brilliant. Dr. Cafaria, who I'm interviewing on Healthy Returns, is doing a remarkable job at 2.9% yield, going to be buying back a lot of stock. He has a drug that rivals Keytruda at Merck, and it's not doing as well. But he says, listen, don't rule him out in terms of winning some head-to-heads. And I think it's just it sells at 10 times earnings. It doesn't have any economic exposure whatsoever. So I do like it, and I think it's very well run.
All right, Jim, we'll watch that. It's been a busy morning of news out of ADP and Treasury as well. Let's get to Rick Santelli this morning. Hey, Rick.
Yeah, Carl, you know that the ADP number was large, but nobody should be shocked. As a matter of fact, in certain ways, I'm shocked it's not higher. But that's a story for another day. Probably Friday would be the day, I would guess, when we get Bureau of Labor Statistics, the government's release for the employment report. Today, 20s are wild. A 20-year we haven't seen since the 80s is most likely going to be having its first auction on the 20th of May. And that 20-year will be sized at $20 billion. So 20s are definitely wild. Many are looking forward to that. We all know that the yields on most of the long-dated maturities, even the 10-year, are pretty minuscule. But then again, the Fed has gone from, what, $75 billion a day to less than $10 billion a day. So they can kind of have a big say-so in where that interest rate is pegged. $96 billion is going to be the refunding next Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, 3s, 10s, and 30s, respectively. That is, of course, a record amount of treasuries in that package. And then another week and a half after that, we'll have 2s, 10s, 2s, 5s, and 7s, also a record size. So it's all about supply and debt, and all of the programs have a cost to them that are helping float the economy in place while it's kind of sidelined cessation due to the coronavirus, of course. Now, look at how the effects have gone into the Treasury complex. Look at an intraday of 10s. We haven't traded as high as 70-plus basis points in 3 weeks, the 15th of April to be exact. And if you look at a two-week chart, you can see we've taken out the top of the range. Same for 30-year bond, taken out the top of the range, traded 140. It hasn't traded 140 in about the same amount of time, 3 weeks. And, of course, the dollar, which has been really counterintuitive to most things going on, it seems to go up when rates go down because all these signals are screwed up. The central bank is needed at this point in time, but they certainly don't make the market signals any more accurate, to be sure. But today, with rates higher, the dollar index popped over 100 again. It's been in a rather tight range between 99 and 100. And on that 24-hour chart, you can see it's come back a bit right under that 100 mark. The strong dollar in this instance, along with interest rates, I think is a pretty good sign. But then again, emerging markets probably would disagree with that. Carl, Jim, and David, back to you.
All right, Rick, we'll talk to you later on this morning. If you were watching CNBC 10 years ago today, you might remember that somewhere in the middle of the session, the market started to act really weird. Watch this.
What we're seeing right now I mean, I believe unprecedented.
It can't be there. That is not a real place. It's too bad. The system obviously broke down. We're going
to
find out that there was a glitch in the
specialist from P&G to talk about what happened.
The machines failed. And it obviously broke down.
It obviously broke down.
No, the market didn't work. It broke down. The machines broke down. That's what happened. Yep.
Jim, your point yesterday was that, your point was that it was a big shook confidence in ways that lasted a lot longer than we might have thought.
Well, I keyed on Proctor that day. My friend Aaron Burnett, I always use Proctor. It's kind of like I use Bristol Myers. And when I came out, Proctor was at 90, and I said it didn't really represent great value. And then 10 minutes later, it was at 40, and I said, geez, you know, Proctor looks really good here. You can't do that. You can't have stocks completely divorce themselves from the fundamentals. That also happened, by the way. Remember when there was an ill-timed comment by a guy who's really fabulous, James Bullard, on a Friday on a serious radio show, and we came in on Monday, and all the stocks were down. People thought they might have to tighten because of what he said, and you had another phony market. The phony market, every time this happens, people say, this asset class is not worthy of my hard-earned money. And I'm always hard-pressed to disagree because they cleaned up their act. I mean, Bob Bazzani did a great piece the other day about how, yes, things didn't break down this time, and I think that's great. But when you have your money in one of the greatest blue chips of all time, Proctor, and it gets cut in half in 12 minutes, is that really, you want your IRA or your 401k cut in half in 12 minutes? It doesn't hold up under close scrutiny, so it's always a problem. And we're starting to protect. But that flash crash had a lot to do with machines overrunning people, which is exactly what happened in 87. And remember, a lot of these are about greed. I mean, we have a lot of machines in there, and exchanges make a lot of money. There's no people anymore. You know what the deal is. I mean, this industry used to be about the buying a piece of America. And now I don't know what it is about. Buying a piece of what? Sorry to be so down. Don't want to be downbeat, but...
Wow.
What?
I'm like you're having a little existential crisis there. I mean, come on.
David, Botox does strange things to you.
Snap out of it.
Disney's up. Yeah. How's that? Disney's up.
There you go.
I'm right.
Disney's
They're wrong.
Up. There you go.
Okay?
Right?
Disney's up. I like Bob Iger. He's back. He's better than ever. He's like Gandhi 2, the sequel.
Disney is up. Yes.
Guys, the pre-market gains that were implied, we've lost some of that, obviously, but we're hanging on to some. We're going to talk to Kroger later on this morning about, obviously, grocery business, what's happening to comps there, meat supply, and a lot more. As a busy Wednesday continues, don't go away. Apple's leading the Dow this morning as Morgan Stanley says that App Store growth is accelerating to multi-year highs, followed by Intel, Microsoft, Pfizer, Nike. A lot more Squawk on the Street continues in a moment. It's time for Jim and Stop Trading.
Look, there's a stock that's up 73% for the year. It's not American. It's Canadian. It's called Shopify. They did a 19-cent gain. People were looking for a 19-cent loss. $470 million in revs. $443 was the expectation. It's an e-commerce place. So why isn't the stock up 40? Well, when you're up this much, people might be tempted to take profits. If they do, Shopify should be on your list of your shopping list because this is the junior Amazon. Now, earlier I said that Beyond Meat could be, well, one of the great growth stocks, but I did not compare it to Tesla. But I will say that Shopify has the growth that even Etsy, PayPal, they all dream of. And Amazon loves them. Everybody loves them. They think that the company is just a bunch of great guys. Based in Canada, harmless, nice, great grower. David, it's where you and I are going to grow. We're going to go to Canada. We're moving.
We are?
Yeah,
harmless?
We're moving.
Really? They're harmless?
They're harmless. No.
All right.
I had them on, and they were so nice. I said, like, guys, like, you got to get, you're just too nice. But nice guys finish first. Leo DeRocher was always wrong. Okay, he was dead wrong.
No kidding.
You asked me to get more.
Yeah, $80 billion market value. You're right. Yes, I know.
Everybody wants to buy them. All the major guys in the valley have asked to buy them, but they are Canada's own, and they're proud Canadians. There, I had to go to my dermatologist.
We're going to Canada.
You bet we are.
All right.
I'll see it.
Let me know.
Well, maybe if not that, if not Canada, then Germany, Jim, where Merkel's on the tape right now saying we've reached the goal of slowing the virus and protecting health care. People from two households now can get together and hang out.
Really?
In Germany. That's where they are. Yeah. And it's, we'll see if now that the president says the task force is sort of going to adjust its focus from the virus to the economy, maybe we get to that point, too.
Jeez. I mean, you can walk on the same side of the street with your, with friends? I'm going to the Tiergarten.
Is that indoors or outdoors? I mean, we're already doing outdoors. That's indoors, I
think.
Guess.
It sounds like you can be, you know, my daughter's in Madrid. Their first time out in 6 weeks. She says it's a great city. She teaches English there by Google Classroom.
Jim, what? One thing we didn't get to was dividends. I know Pisani was going to mention this in his hit, but Wendy's cut the dividend, but Pepsi upped the dividend.
Yeah, look, Pepsi's just, there's very few companies. Of course, Wendy's is up. Can you believe it? Well, they were going to hear about breakfast is good. Pepsi's doing remarkably well, but it's down substantially from when it reported. But I think that Ramon LaGuardia is not a promotional figure. He's terrific, and I think Pepsi's a great buy. I like the consumer packaged goods stocks. I'm very happy with them, David. I'm not negative. Carl, David thought I was negative today. And then people said, why don't you blast the PRC more? The people who criticize me, pound sand. I'm giving her all she got.
So, Jim, really quick,
You just sounded like you were having a, you know.
Oh,
existential. You're not buying a piece of America anymore, your whole thing there.
Were more piece of America. Look at this lineup. I've got CVS right at the top, okay? I've got Waste Management. Well, what's the tell there? I've got Mattel. What the heck happened there? And Beyond Meat, David, this is going to be the biggest company on earth. How's that? Did I do it for you?
That sounds more Kramer-esque to me.
All right,
yes,
thank you.
That makes me feel better.
David, someone asked the other day, Jim, you're a little downbeat. He said, well, I've seen my wife once in 3 months, and it's called a pandemic. I guess I should be celebrating it. I miss my wife. There, that's existential.
Yeah.
I'm going to see her this weekend.
All right, well,
we're
going to
plant
get on
seeds.
That, Jim.
We're going to plant
gotta
seeds.
Get on that.
All right. I'm not existential. It's just
we'll see you tonight, Jim.
Pandemic's a bit of a bummer, David.
You've been listening to the opening bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.